Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast for Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, William Liu, speaking to you after the Toronto Raptors lose on the road by a score of 114-97. It was a fun first quarter. Raptors were moving the ball, hitting shots. It's looking very smooth. Obviously, their defense wasn't fully there as the Raptors gave up 66 points in the first half. But, you know, first quarter, I was like, okay, this is promising. But as the game went on, it just became more and more clear just how tired the Raptors were. I thought this is a game where Nick tried to manage and massage the minutes a little bit because the starting lineup was doing okay, but pretty much all the other lineups, anybody coming off the bench, they just weren't giving the Raptors anything. And so Nick was kind of just hoping and praying that some of these guys can just hold it down for a little bit. And, you know, you saw at least for like 2 minutes in the fourth quarter when Nick had Pascal out there as sort of the shepherd for the second unit there. You know, they got it down to 6 points after Pascal finished an and one. And it was like, okay, the Raptors might actually be in position to steal this one. You know, you hold out for like two or three more minutes, you bring the starters back in, you can close this out. But no such luck. The Pacers instead go from being up six to up 13 with the 7-0 run. The Raptors toss up some bad shots. Pascal gets the ball poked free, and then he drives, you know, and didn't really have a step on anybody and just kind of threw up a little nothing shot, and that kind of went nowhere. And it's hard to blame him, though, because, like, nobody else on the bench was doing anything. And, you know, the Raptors conclude this road trip 2-4. I think the second unit obviously is going to be affected the most when you have some of these injuries. You know, no OJ Anunoby tonight. Once again, he's close, Nick says. Yuta Watanabe, he played obviously against Memphis. He doesn't play today. It was listed as calf injury management. So, okay. Ken Birch continues to be out with a knee soreness. And so what you're left with is the guys that you have currently on the bench. And whether that was Boucher in 14 minutes, I thought he was not good, even though he did have 9 points. So relative to the other guys, I guess he's better. But yeah, you know, he just was not very productive. Malachi, 1 of 6 off the bench, minus 13, thoroughly outplayed by TJ McConnell. Like, schooled, I would say, is the right word for how much he got outplayed by TJ McConnell, including, by the way, TJ McConnell driving hard on him at the end of the shot clock. Hard drive, pivot, spin move, turnaround jumper. Come on, man. You just can't be giving that up. Delano was not much better either. Kind of sloppy. Defensively, I thought he was probably... Well, defensively, he was the best one out of the group, so I do applaud him for that. He had to guard Caris LeVert quite a bit in this game, and he did a decent job of keeping him in front. Caris is a pretty tough driver, but offensively wasn't really giving the Raptors anything. And then Svi had a ton of open looks, just so many open looks for Svi, and he just couldn't get him to drop. And obviously, when he doesn't hit the open look, he's not giving you anything else. So what you end up with is a situation where the Raptors get 15 total points off the bench, which was matched by Kelon Martin on the other side, who, you know, I'm sure many NBA fans have not really heard of. And yeah, I mean, the Raptors as a whole get outscored massively on the bench. You know, Martin with 15, Duarte with 12. Duarte was really good in this one, even though he was missing some shots. But yeah, he was really pesky in this one. He's just a tough offensive player in general. Torrey Craig, I mean, he's not even a scorer, and he's kept getting behind the defense, you know, for offensive rebounds, for little cuts underneath, go corner threes. Like, you know, he was a pain. And TJ McConnell is genuinely a pain every time you play him. 4 points, 4 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals. Like, he's just always a thorn in your side when you play the Pacers. So the Raptors get completely washed off the bench. And I'm not saying that that was the entire story. Like, I think the Pacers also were much more physical in the paint. They clearly won the battle in the paint. You know, they had 60 points in the paint. Again, the Raptors average about 40, 42 points allowed per game in the paint. So to get hit for 60 down low is pretty tough. And quite honestly, like, this was a game where not a lot of fouls are being called. There's a lot being let go. And I think the Pacers are just, you know, with their front court, were just able to really hurt the Raptors. Sabonis in particular, like, the Raptors had games where there's a game earlier this season where they held Sabonis to 3 baskets. So, you know, that's something that the Raptors have done well, is to guard Sabonis. But the thing is, one of the reasons the Raptors have guarded Sabonis so well is because they've used OG Anunoby in that matchup. They've put OG on him quite a bit. OG has the strength to hold him in the post, to box him out. You know, OG's really missed. Clearly, he's like, he's one off, if not the Raptors' best player this season. So you don't have OG. OG normally feasts in this Pacers matchup. We've seen him have 30 against the Pacers routinely. And, you know, I think Sabonis was definitely able to break free. 18 rebounds for him, including 7 offensive rebounds for 23 points. But the Pacers just kept kind of getting inside. And it wasn't the greatest defensive performance by the Raptors. I think fatigue played a factor in here. I think the fourth quarter, the Raptors really ran out of gas. But still, they kind of were out-muscled quite a bit. And not to say that's like expected, but at the same time, when you look at the roster, when you're missing 3 interior defenders in OG Anunoby, in Ken Burch, who's your biggest player, and in Utah, who I understand, like, you know, we talk about Utah quite a bit on this program. That's fine. I think he's good. But like, you miss even just his presence down low, you miss. So, you know, it's not a surprising result. I think, especially as the game went on, guys started getting banged up. I thought Fred was a little bit slow after probably the second quarter, maybe after the first half. Fred looked a little bit slowed. Gary got tripped up on the baseline by Caris LeVert, fell on his just fell over. He got the free throws and he knocked both of those down, but it just seemed like that was bothering him, his leg. And I was watching him. And then eventually at the end of the game, in the fourth quarter, he doesn't check in because he's just ruled out for the game with calf, you know, soreness or calf tightness or something like that. It's to be honest, I don't want to hear about calves because Utah's been injured with the calf. Now, of course, there's different degrees of calf injuries, but it's a little scary for me right now. And yeah, Gary wasn't able to come in the fourth quarter. To be honest, after that trip, I don't think Gary made a single jumper. Even though he was hot to start the game, even though he was great to start with the second unit there, he kind of lost his touch there. I just think his leg was definitely bothering him. He had some pretty bad misses, and we know Gary's usually a very good shooter, so he was taken out of the game. Raptors closing the game with guys like Chris Boucher and Delano Banton, and, you know, that's just not a winning formula for them. And, you know, I think a lot of this game you could really, you know, put on the fatigue factor. I that's why I don't really blame them. I thought they actually fought pretty hard, especially in the second half. The defense was a lot better. Nick went to a steady dose of zone coverages, which was effective in terms of keeping the Pacers out of the paint. In terms of, they have some pretty tough drivers. Brogdon is a powerful player. He's able to drive inside. He had 12 assists today. A lot of them were just drive and kick. Caris LeVert is also a slasher. So, you know, and McConnell is also a hard driver. So I think the zone defense did a good job in terms of just keeping some of the drives at bay. But when the shot went up, the Raptors missed a number of key offensive rebounds there. Like when they were down 6, they missed a couple of offensive rebounds. And the ball squirted out to LeVert at the top of the floor, and he bangs a 3. Like, and that's just like, you just have to have that. If you're going to be serious about making a comeback and you cut it to 6, and that's as close as Raptors got in the quarter, you have to win the next rebound. Let alone the next 2 rebounds, because Raptors missed both of those, and it goes out for a 3. Like, it's just a couple of sequences like that. I think, you know, first half also, it just felt like, again, the Raptors were kind of going through the motions a little bit defensively. Like, the defensive intensity for this team just needs to stay high all the time. And I felt like in the first half, the Pacers didn't feel the Raptors defensively at all. The Raptors were able to score quite a bit, especially in the first quarter, 35. They were up 35-31, but it felt like the Pacers would get easy shots. Guys can drive downhill and get to their spots. And, you know, of course, they were going to have to double team a couple of their guys down low, especially Sabonis. So it just didn't feel like the Raptors' defensive intensity was there in the first half. And then when they did turn on the second half, the Raptors offensively, they just kind of had nothing. I think Gary's injury hurt them. I think Fred kind of being overextended hurt them. He started out really well. He cooled off. Pascal, kind of the same deal. Him and Fred with a nice 2-man game at the start of the game was quite beautiful. But that didn't really, you know, carry over into the fourth quarter. And really, the Raptors scoring in the second half, the bulk of it was carried by Scottie Barnes, who was awesome in the third quarter. I thought he came in a little bit late in the fourth quarter, but then again, he did have his thumb bent back again, this time by the Pacers, which, by the way, the first time he hurt his thumb was against the Pacers. That was the win that they had against Indy. That was the Matt Devlin T game, the flu game, where he was losing his voice. And at the end of that game, Scotty reached in and, you know, he bent his thumb back and he missed a couple of games. Then he comes back. Obviously, he's been, you know, up and down in terms of his production, but still very much involved and playing through the thumb. And then today, you know, he's just, I forget what the play was, but the Pacers, Justin Holiday, he swiped in and tried to just attack the ball, just a regular basketball play. Of course, you know, people do that all the time. And he hit Scotty across the hand, no foul, but Scotty's hurt. You know, the play goes on for, you know, another minute, and then Scotty has to check out, go straight to the locker room. And the thing is, he was able to get it retaped. So shout out Alex McKechnie, obviously one of the best just medical professionals in professional sports. And he was able to get Scotty back in condition to play. And he was really sharp in the third quarter. Scotty was by far the Raptors' most positive player in the second half. And it was really exhilarating just sort of seeing him take over. I know he only shot the ball 9 times. It was not really a sign of like how what his involvement was in offense. It felt like for a stretch there, every single play was going through him, and he was setting guys up. He was drawing free throws. He was getting to the rim. Just another very mature and promising performance from Scotty. If anything, actually, I wanted Scotty to, well, I mean, to be honest, I wanted Scotty to play the entire fourth quarter and for them to run the offense through him all the time. I mean, I realize that's a little unrealistic, but it just felt like he was the one who still had the energy, still had the juice to get to all his spots. And he was drawing help, and he was doing a really good job of either when the help didn't come, he was scoring, you know, quite effectively. Again, it's with Scotty, it's his strength. So he's able to get to his spots, go straight up, and then just launch a nice soft hook shot. And he was able to do that quite a few times. You know, he even got Sabonis on a switch, one possession. He realized who he had, pulled it out, got to the 3-point line, you know, crossed it back and forth a few times, shifted Sabonis one step out of the way, then drove to his spot. And then instead of trying to explode and get all the way to the basket in one go, which does potentially allow Sabonis to come back and maybe close down and get a block off the basket or something, or off the backboard or something, Scotty uses his strength, muscles his way into that spot, owns that spot. Sabonis recovers. He takes the bump on the recovery and then goes up for the shot and finishes and one. That was an awesome play. That was probably the play of the game for me, honestly, Scotty just being that confident. But Scotty, honestly, just was really strong in other areas too, even just small minor things like Chris Boucher's up ahead on the play. And you'll see this a lot. You know, Boucher will have smaller guys on him, and then for some reason, Boucher really wants to post up guys, even though I don't think I've ever seen Chris Boucher score a post up. But like, he likes to post up guys. But the thing is, if you do post him up and if he has inside position, you have to find a way to deliver him the ball. And, you know, even Scotty with just a nice high-low feed from the 3-point line to Chris Boucher, who's able to spin and then get to the rim for a layup and one, missed a free throw. You know, I thought most of the positives in the second half came out of Scotty, but for the other guys, they were just gassed. You know, and honestly, it was also a bit of a tough matchup as well, because with the Raptors shooting really poorly from 3, 7 of 30, Gary's out because he got hurt. Plus, he was not shooting the three well after he got hurt. Svi just being bricks at all times. Malachi throwing up some really bad misses as well. That really hurt the Raptors, because the only shooter on the floor that was really dangerous to Indiana was Fred VanVleet. And Fred was 4 of 10. A lot of that was in the first half. You just can't, that's not sustainable. When you don't have threes from Scotty, you don't have threes from Precious. Pascal's 1 for 4 from 3. The jumper wasn't really going for him. I think that 3 was in the first quarter as well, so he was a non-factor from 3 for most of the game. Chris Boucher just continues to just not be productive. Period. He was 1 for 3. You know, that was in the second quarter, but I missed him when it counted, especially in the fourth quarter when Raptors were trying to make a push. But there was just no shooting at all. So the Pacers were not only bigger in terms of starting two centers, they were able to shrink the floor, take away a lot of drives, help off of Precious, help off of Scotty, help off of Pascal. And it just really made things really difficult. And so, you know, I thought that was a trend that even started from the start of the game. This is not even like just fatigue as the game went on. Even at the start of the game, like Turner was just like helping so liberally off of, you know, Precious. And the Raptors were able to get Precious a couple of baskets. just by exploiting the gaps in the defense that were intentionally set. But for the most part, Turner did a great job of protecting the basket. And because he doesn't need to really be on his man, like other guys can always help out on these drives. And so Fred wasn't really able to get to the rim as much, even though I thought he got to the rim as much as anybody tonight, but he wasn't really good at the rim that much. Pascal sometimes got to the rim, but you know, we saw in the fourth quarter as well, the defense completely converging on him because he's the only threat. And that really hurt the Raptors offensively. Only 16 points in the fourth quarter, 35 points in the first quarter. But after that, 22, 24, 16, like, you know, that's pretty manageable. And they finished the game with 97 points. And, you know, in terms of some of the key factors in which the Raptors usually win, like usually you expect the Raptors to win the possession battle. And the Pacers tonight shot 97 field goal attempts. They had the offensive rebound battle won with 17 to 13. The Raptors did force two more turnovers, but 12 turnovers is a pretty good game when you're playing against the Raptors, considering how aggressive they play. So it was just a tough night for the Raptors. It really was. I sympathize with them, though, because it really seemed like a combination of fatigue and also guys out of the lineup, especially some key guys. OG is so important to the Indiana Pacers, this specific matchup against them. And you don't have him on a night where the Pacers' bigs are really feasting. You don't have Kem. And, you know, again, I don't want to overstate Utah's importance, but I think Utah could have guarded Kaylon Martin, for example, who had 15 and had all of the... He matched the entire second unit for the Raptors. And again, no disrespect to him, man. He's going to win the Gerald Henderson Award winner. But, you know, he has played sparingly as a rookie this year. And, man, he was just bodying the Raptors. It was... No, he's not a rookie. I guess he's a second-year player. Yeah, anyway. This is definitely the most impressive game I've seen from him, though. So, it's a tough one. It really is a tough one. And, of course, I did ask for Twitter questions, so I'm going to go through a couple of those because there's only so many times I could say that they were tired. not to excuse him, which is not to excuse him, but I'm sure that... There are more interesting things to say other than fatigue. So first one from Chris. Chris asks, why is Boucher still getting minutes? If Bonga took his minutes and made one positive play, it'd be 100% improvement. Okay, I think it's a little bit overreaction in terms of the Bonga thing. Boucher's getting minutes because the Raptors really need front court help because he did play productively last season and because they've had so many injuries. So we saw, for example, Utah coming back that first game against Memphis. Chris only played 7 minutes, only played in the first half, didn't play in the second half. Utah took his minutes there. But then with Utah's out, who else are you really going to play? Like, I mean, I understand the frustration. I really do. Trust me, if anyone understands the frustration, it's me. But, yeah, the Raptors are down bad right now. They're very thin. They're extremely thin in terms of the depth right now, just because of the injuries. And all the injuries happening in one position. So it's a little bit tough. I hear you, though. I think, really, ultimately, what I would like to see is Chris just play better because I think he can contribute to this roster. And I think the Raptors really need him to contribute to this roster. Like, I think they could really use his scoring, for example, especially for the second unit, who, you know, again, getting outscored by Kelon Martin is really tough. But, you know, I just think Chris just hasn't really had it for them. Like, he continues to make mental mistakes that are so obvious. There's a play. And I really want to go back and clip this because I just really want to know what happened. Because for me, what I saw was the Raptors were scrambling around on defense. Chris was lost on the rotation. And for some reason, he decided to jump at his own basket and blocked the shot as if there was a shot happening. Except that the ball was at the three-point line. So I really need to go back and watch this just to confirm it because I don't want to slander a man without him doing it. But There's just enough lapses where you do get frustrated. I think Nick gets frustrated at him as well. And yeah, it's just not going for him. But with the injuries the way they are, with OG, who usually plays some four for the Raptors, with Yuta being out, with even Kem being out, like you just kind of need some minutes. And they turn to Chris. And to be fair, the other bench guys perform even worse than Chris, at least offensively. So, you know, it wasn't like they lost specifically on him. There's a lot of Chris conversations. Okay, so this one from JDG47. What frustrates you more, Boucher's missed threes with 18 seconds left on the shot clock, his inability to rebound under the basket, or the way he's always bewildered when he's called for a foul? Yeah, that's tough. Yeah, that's really tough. I would say all of the above. Where's the all of the above function? I mean, you just hope that he starts making some of these plays because we've seen him do it in the past, last season in particular. But this year, it's really been one positive game out of 20 games played. That is a pretty bad ratio. So it's a little tough. I like this question from Jay Rich. He asks, is it fair to conclude that outside of a lack of consistency, opponents now have enough film to break down the Raptors' defense? Or is it all about schemes and execution? I think it's fair in the sense that certain teams do a really good job of anticipating what the Raptors are going to do. Like the Jazz, for example, I thought did a really good job of that. Of course, they had a veteran point guard, Mike Conley, who has seen every defense under the sun. But, you know, teams that really come prepared in terms of their stars, understanding that they're going to be doubled, they're going to be trapped at times, and just being able to move the ball really quickly and get the ball usually to an open corner shooter. That's really where the Raptors get hurt the most. I think certain teams do understand that and anticipate that and almost plan for it in particular. And so, yes, I think some teams do a good job of scouting the Raptors, obviously. I mean, plus every game is scouted. Like, what do you really expect? But then again, I think tonight's game was not necessarily an example of, like, the Pacers breaking the Raptors' defense so much as the Raptors just didn't seem like they had enough energy to close out possessions. They weren't. Even just like small things like being physical and pushing Sabonis out of his spots. That's one of the reasons why the Raptors have done a really good job of containing Sabonis is that like he's pretty effective, but mostly he's effective like really close to the basket. Like he's really going to hurt you there. And the Raptors have just done a really good job of in previous games where they beat the Pacers twice this season. They have put a body on Sabonis and they have pushed them out of his spots so that he's not catching the ball 5 feet from the basket. He's catching the ball 10 feet from the basket, 15 feet, and he's got to, you know, dribble a few times. And then, you know, the help's going to be able to come. And, like, that physicality element was just missing from the Raptors tonight. And I think that, more than anything else, really hurt them. Plus, of course, the second unit was just so badly outplayed. It's you know, you're just not going to win a lot of games when you get outscored, like, let's see here, 40? Yeah, wow. Okay, so they got outscored 42-15. In the second unit, like that's how are you going to overcome that? That's 27 points. Where are you going to make up the 27 points with your starters? That's, you're asking a lot. It's not like the Pacers don't have good starters. Like the Pacers starting five is pretty solid. So it's just a lot to make up. But I don't think this is a case of the Raptors defense getting broken specifically. I think this was a case of just a lack of execution in terms of just guys were tired. But of course, check back in game to game. This question from Thomas: why is Svi over Decker? Not that Decker would make them any better if he was still on the team. That's a strange one. I'm not really sure what people are thinking about Decker at this current moment. I mean, I guess, you know, he was on the team and there's excitement around that, I guess. But I think the Raptors really wanted another guard because they just don't have a lot of guards, period, in their rotation. And, you know, let's not pretend like Svi hasn't had some good games. I think, obviously, tonight, Svi just couldn't get a jumper to drop. Like, there were a number of open jumpers that were there for Svi tonight that he would normally hit, open in the corner, open in the top, step in from the closeout, open in the mid-range, and he was just missing all of those. Like, he felt like he was short on all of them. And so, what are you going to do? If a shooter is going to start missing some shots, that's just a bad player. You know, and that's kind of where Svi is. You know, I think sometimes he's able to drive inside. Like, I think his one basket was a cut where he got downhill off a curl and was able to jump and finish. And honestly, a pretty nice left-handed finish around Sabonis at the basket after taking some contact. But he's generally not going to do that all that much. And especially if he's not making shots, well, you can curl all you want. You're probably not going to be open. So, yeah, it's tough. It's tough. It's some of these questions after games. I mean, people are upset. I maybe we should have opened the phone lines. We could have heard some real frustration here. This question here: can we get a decent big for Dragic, Achiuwa, and Boucher? Actually, I don't think Achiuwa is the problem. I actually really like Achiuwa. I know that there weren't even that many missed opportunities offensively today. I mean, he's actually one of the bigs that provides physicality for this team. He's guarded pretty well as well. His defensive numbers are strong. and I pass his eye test to me. He's been good as a defender, just period. But I think the issue is, you know, in some of these games when you have 7-footers, and two of them, by the way, it's Sabonis and Turner. Turner less so because he's not that physical of a player offensively. Defensively, he's obviously a presence with the shot blocking. But Sabonis in particular, like, you probably want a guy who's stronger to bang with him. Again, usually you would have OG to do that in this matchup, but of course he was not available today, so they had nobody to do that because Kem also wasn't available. But if you do want to trade for a center, I mean, I wouldn't mind. Obviously, the Raptors aren't using Dragic, and so if they can find a trade for Dragic, I would be pretty happy with that. Of course, one of the things I'd be looking to get back in that trade would be a front court player, especially a front court prospect. But even a veteran center, I would take, depending on sort of where the Raptors are at that point in the season when they do trade Goran. And of course, there's also open question as to can they trade Goran, because he does make $19 million, and not a lot of contending teams, first off, are thinking every game like, hey, how can we get Goran Dragic? But B, even if they are, a lot of contending teams don't have just $19 million sitting around. So we'll see. I'm sure, I have faith in their front office, obviously, just in general. Obviously, I feel very good about that. But yeah, if they ideally, in an ideal world, if they can turn Goran into a center who can, you know, take on some of these matchups. This is the thing that I've always wanted to see from the Raptors in the last few years, is like, or last 2 years since Serge and Markov left, was like, okay, I understand prioritizing other positions. To be honest, like, I honestly, the value of centers in the league has consistently dropped over the last few years. But at the same time, I do want to see, I do want to see at least one guy in the lineup that's 7 feet tall, that's strong enough to like go in there and tackle a few matchups. I'm not saying that I need this guy to play all the time, but I would like to say like 10 to 15 minutes if you have him. It's like having just a reliever in your bullpen. Like, sometimes you just, like, I don't know, you just need that left-handed guy off, you know, out of the pen for specific matchups, get you one or two outs, and then most times he doesn't play. That's fine, but you know, when you kind of need it, you'll be useful. And the Raptors just have not had that guy in the last two seasons. Although maybe, I guess you can argue Aaron Baines was technically that guy, but then the Raptors were starting him, and yeah, that's tough. You just can't start that man. Come on. A lot of questions about the five. It's really, really tough. But I do like this question in particular, Chown Chappie. Is Raptors Twitter expecting too much from a rebuilding team with 3 rotation players not in the lineup? I mean, I guess so. I mean, I think everyone watches the game when they turn on the game on a Friday night and they're spending the time, you know, watching the TV and watching the broadcast. They probably expect to see wins and they expect to see a competitive product. And, you know, I don't blame them for that. I mean, I don't know if, like, people are overreacting so much as they're just frustrated because the Raptors lost. This was a frustrating game. Obviously, the Raptors got kind of close with the 6 points, but then just like really got the doors blown up at the end. To be honest, to me, yeah, I see the perspective there too, and that's why I'm not really feeling that negatively about the team. It's just like they do look really tired, and there's not much you can do. To be honest, when they brought up the graphic tonight on the broadcast of, like, you know, the Raptors and the history of 6-game road trips out west, and like their best record is 4-2. So, you know, 2-4 is not that surprising. To be honest, if I look back on this road trip, the games that I really regret not getting are the Portland game. I thought they should have, you know, well, not they should have, but if they played even some decent defense, they could have taken that one. You know, the Jazz game, I mean, again, you could say if they played some defense, they could have taken that one as well. But yeah, I was mostly looking at this game against the Pacers, the Grizzlies game, the Kings game, as the 3 games that I thought you have a really good shot of winning. And tonight, though, given the Raptors' injuries, no OG in particular, Indiana kind of took itself out of that category. Plus, like, look, I'm not saying it's all down on motivation, but the Raptors did beat the Pacers twice this year, including beating them at home. This is a good enough team where they're not going to let you do that for a third straight time. So, especially if you're understaffed. So, yeah, I'm not surprised at the result. I'm not really disappointed at the team. But, I mean, people can feel what they want, honestly. And then the last question from, I'm not going to read that name on the air, but the question is, what do you think of the Fred Malachi Sfi lineup? And my thoughts on it is that I'd never want to see it. I understand that sometimes when the rotation is really thin, Gary's out, you know, Gary's banged up, whatever. Like, you might have to see it, but I've seen it twice this season. It was against the Pistons, and it was here against the Pacers. Both times they got blown out. Both times we were going up against a way bigger team. Don't play that lineup. Nick, please don't play that lineup. It just does nothing. I understand that on theory, on the paper, you know, there's some spacing, but to be honest, Malachi's shooting has not been good enough to consider it spacing. And defensively, that group is just way too small. There's not enough downhill threats as well either. I think Fred obviously can get downhill, but he's a little bit small too. And then Malachi has just not really put much pressure on any defense in any game he's been in this season. And then Svi is Svi. Like, he's going to catch a shoot, you know? So, it's tough. It's tough. But the Raptors lost tonight. Again, it's not necessarily a, for me personally at least, it's not necessarily a loss where you feel all that frustrated. I don't think this is, like, bad coaching. I don't think this is, like, a bad performance elsewhere. Like, I think a couple of guys could have given you sharper defensive performances, but on the whole, they were tired against a team that were very sharp tonight. The Pacers were really sharp. And they were missing some open threes too, because this could have easily been a blowout. But, you know, these games will happen. Can't be too mad. They're 2-1 on the season against the Pacers. That's, and, you know, in all honesty, when the Raptors beat the Pacers those two times, they were banged up. So I feel like they were owed a game against the banged up Raptors to get some revenge, karmically at least. So in terms of your three stars from tonight's game, I'm going to give the first star to Scottie Barnes. 17 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, a block. You know, 5-9 shooting. I don't think this, by the way, that's not like a, everyone's first focus is how many shots does Scottie take. I don't think, like, it wasn't like Scottie was not involved in the offense. To me, it's just like Scottie kind of just waits usually to see how the game develops, and then third quarters is usually when Scottie makes his push, and tonight was exactly that. And yeah, I would love it if he made that push in the first quarter as well. But clearly Fred and Pascal were and just in general, Fred had a really strong first quarter, and the Raptors were scoring well, so there wasn't as much for Scottie to do. But in the third quarter in particular, when the game started getting really slow, really physical, Scottie was shining. He was shining, man. And he just makes impressive plays. Whether that's the shake and bake against Sabonis going downhill, just like pushing a center out of the way. Like, I mean, he did this against Sabonis already earlier this season, so I wasn't surprised. But it's just really impressive to see a rookie push a 7-footer around. I mean, all I watched today was Sabonis pushing the Raptors around with 18 rebounds, including 7 offensive. So to see Scottie take it to him, that felt really nice. But it's also just really impressive. Scottie getting the offensive glass, Scottie getting some really nice passes. You know, yeah, just a really nice night for Scottie. I was happy for him. And hopefully the thumb stays, you know, pain-free for him, because it was pretty scary when he got raked across the hands by Holiday. And that's going to happen like over and over and over again this season. You're playing basketball, you're going to get hit in your hand. So hopefully that thumb injury is not going to be something that holds him out of any games. Seeing that he played so well in the second half, hopefully this is not something that's going to carry over. But we do know that this is something that he was going to wear a wrap for pretty much every game. But Scottie's going to get the first star for me. Second star, I'm going to give it to Fred VanVleet. 26 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, a block, 4 turnovers, which was unfortunate. Again, the Pacers did a really good job of collapsing in the paint. And also 5 personal fouls. You know, yeah. But for me, honestly, I think for Fred, offensively, got the team off to a really strong start. Couldn't really sustain it, but I think you kind of needed some other things to kind of go the Raptors' way. Fred also kind of started losing his steam a little bit. Even he got a little bit tired. He played 38 minutes. He had a couple of jumpers he couldn't really get the legs into as the game went on. But, you know, 26, 5, and 4 on almost 50% shooting is pretty good. It's pretty good. I wouldn't complain about that, and I'm not here to do that. And then your third star, I guess I'll give it to Pascal. I thought there were moments defensively to me. There were a few moments that really, like, I was like, okay, he's behind there defensively. He's behind here defensively. But, I mean, if you look at it on the whole, 17 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, a block. You know, the fact that he had 12 rebounds on a night where the Raptors were getting pummeled on the glass, you do respect that. I mean, he had a great chase down block, that one block. He was he came all the way back defensively, and it was a chase down play right at the basket. Really bang-bang call, but just a great bit of hustle by the Raptors, by Pascal in particular, and the Raptors able to secure the ball. So, you know, 17-12 with four rebounds with Pascal right now. Like, I don't think that's a bad performance. Again, I would like to see his defense sharpen up more. There are a few things that he's leaving on the table, but, you know, he was solid. In terms of your Gerald Henderson Award winner, I already said it already. Keylon Martin, 15 points, three rebounds, an assist, a steal, a block. Just really physical down low. A shooting guard that wasn't really shooting it that well. I mean, the way I would compare it would be like Keldon Johnson on the Spurs. Like, it was that kind of performance. A guard that has a big body, is really physical. And he hurt the Raptors quite a bit, honestly. And he was hurting Pascal quite a bit, honestly. To be honest, like, he just came out of nowhere. He just came out of nowhere. He was not on my scouting report whatsoever for this game. But, you know, the Raptors lose to the Pacers. They finished the road trip. Finally, they get to be home. The Raptors now can finally work on improving their 2-6 home record, because they're at home for almost the entirety of the month of December. And they got to capitalize, man. Their schedule is getting a little bit easier. They played a lot of tough teams so far. To be honest, the East is just pretty tough in general. You're not going to get a lot of gimme wins. Like, you're only so many times you get to play Orlando or who are the other teams? I guess Detroit would be the other gimme win, but the Raptors lost to them, so that's not even a gimme either. So, you know, you're going to have to start making up some ground, and the Raptors really should take advantage of this long homestand to make up some ground in the standings. I think this team does have a run in them. I think this team has really helped themselves by improving their offense. Obviously, it didn't really happen today, but in general this season, the Raptors are top 10 offensively. And what they need to do is just sharpen up that defense, because this is a team that should be defending a lot better than they are, especially over the course of this road trip. We've seen it at times. The second half against Memphis, they were strong, but we need to see it consistently. And if they can piece together the defense, I think their offense this season has been better than expected. So they do that, they can make a bit of a run. So thanks everyone for listening. Once again, you can subscribe to the Raptors Reaction, the Raptors Reaction Podcast, and all episodes of the Raptors Show under the Raptors Show, wherever you find podcasts. So look for it there. Make sure you check out the Weekend Hour with Alex Wong tomorrow at 12 p.m. And I'll be back on the Reaction Podcast on Sunday when the Raptors play the Boston Celtics. So thanks everyone for listening, and I'll check back in after that game.